Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who's about to record his last podcast as a 55-year-old man. It's Richard Herring. When did I grow old? I might get stone clearing in tomorrow morning. This won't be the last one. It will be, I'm not sure yet. Welcome to... You're much better than last week's audience, and... It must be a different audience, because I'm wearing a different shirt. How would that be possible? Welcome to Richard's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I was talking to Nickelback the other day, Nicholas Nickelback. Was that literally just a pun on stickleback? Was that why they were called Nickelback? Is it like the stickleback fish? Can't be, can it? It can't be. I think they were obsessed with sticklebacks. Do you remember sticklebacks? You must remember sticklebacks. They call it Rahalista, but anyway, so that's fine. We're recording this on the 10th of July, 2 days before my 56th birthday. It's unbelievable. 4 years to... Oh, shit, I'm 60. If I can make it that... Fingers crossed. Not all of me's made it, let's face it. As we're recording this, there's been some controversy about the BBC. And people got very upset on Twitter about this. And they're going, the BBC, they named Cliff Richard. And they're not naming this guy. What's going on? It's hypocrisy. You go, yeah, the reason they're not naming this guy is because they named Cliff Richard. And they had to pay £2 million. That's why. Which do you want? Never mind. But... look, I was doing a gig in Balham yesterday, which was where, which is, we may talk about this with the guests, where I lived for many years back in the 1990s and the early 2000s. A beautiful gig at the Bedford in Balham, which I first performed at that venue in 1990. It was terrific to be back. It's a beautiful venue, but I made the mistake of looking up the shitty little flat that I bought in 1997 for 95. I bought it for £95,000. Imagine that, young people. Actually, a London house in a nice, what is now a nice part of London, £95,000. It is now worth £765,000. I mean, it's not worth that, but that's how much you would have to pay. And there's a Pret in Balham. Now, why did I move? Why did I move? I could be living in that flat on my own, eating Pret every single day. What a mistake I've made. in my terrible life. Just a reminder to you at home and people here, Rahul Aspra is going on tour all over the UK and Dublin, which is not in the UK. It's in the EU, like I wish I was, which I will be for a night. Go to richtraining.com/Rahul Aspra to find out more information. We've got some fantastic guests coming up. Joe Lycett's going to be on in Birmingham if you want to travel up there, London people. Be worth it. Right, let's crack on. My guest this week is probably best known for his portrayal of Sven Yabsley in Brass Eye. That might actually be true. Will you please welcome the incredible Peter Bainham, ladies and gentlemen. Sven Yabsley. Peter Bainham from off of Brass Eye. You played a few roles in these seminal TV shows that you also wrote for.
I did.
Gay desk guy, Colin.
Yes, Colin Popshed, yes. Yeah. Yes. Is that allowed? No, I'm not sure.
I don't know if you'd be allowed to do that now.
I don't think it was a homophobic joke. It was just like a random things were gay.
It's about what was
I've started
gay.
By saying, please don't cancel me.
It'd be great if I can get you cancelled. Yeah. That'd be by the end of this interview. What was Sven Yabsley in Brass Eye? What was that one?
I don't know.
Well, okay.
I don't know. I never knew the name of him.
Okay. Yeah. And you were the...
I don't even know who it was. No,
you were
idea
the guy in Tony... You were there interviewing Tony Farino. That was the biggest... What was he called?
Yes. Oh, my God. Do you know?
No, I haven't written
it down. Right, yes. Oh, he was Ross Willard.
Yes, it was.
In my head, he was the son of the other person who used to be on Tomorrow's World called William Willard.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And he was a son, yeah. I had a whole backstory in which he'd admired his father, William Willard, who's one of the presenters on Tomorrow's World.
It really came across.
And he got into presenting because of that, yeah.
Yeah, it was good. It was happy days. It was interesting back in Ballarum. I was thinking about you, I'd forgotten you were coming on. I wasn't thinking about you coming on. I was just thinking, Sistova Road, you mentioned that in Fist of Fun.
Yes.
There was. Do you remember when we used to live together in Malham for a couple of years?
Yeah.
Wasn't it always a sexual relationship?
No. I mostly stole your bread and...
Yes, and said you were delighted my granddad had died. That was mainly what happened. And
I made the mistake of looking on Twitter about this thing today. And she said, Peter, and she said, will you please ask him if he's still delighted?
I mean, he would have died
by grandfather is dead, and I'm not. But yeah. I've got past the delight.
Okay. I'm glad.
I've moved on.
We all believe you were still delighted about it. We lived, as I'm sure we've said before, in the flat we lived together, we lived downstairs from Terry Johnson, the playwright.
Yes. Yeah.
So it must have been the most creative house in Ballarum, at least. Yes. There was an incredible... His washing machine flooded and flooded our flat.
Yeah, yeah. That's what we know him for.
Yeah, that's what he's mainly known for.
I'd like to write a review in the Stage newspaper just saying, I don't care, he flooded my flat. One star.
Yeah. Are you happy memories of living in Ballarum?
Yeah.
You lived there for quite a while, didn't you?
Yeah, very happy. We used to go to Goblin's Wine Bar.
Yeah.
Where you had your birthday.
Yeah, my 30th birthday.
It was very nice, yes. No. I remember there was a big argument between you and another former colleague.
Oh, yes. I wonder who that could be.
In which, did we talk about this on the... By the way, I'm terrified that everything I say we talked about on the last time I came on your show, but just repeat. Is that okay if say the same things?
Yeah.
But I remember an argument. I don't know if this is personal and sad, but it was whether CD-ROMs would replace books.
It was about whether...
And you felt very strongly that CD-ROMs would replace books.
I said there would be... I said, in the 1990s, you'd be able to buy a device, and I thought you'd... And I'm sure we have had this conversation. Yeah. You'd be able to be like a Game Boy, you'd be able to put a book into it. It wasn't a CD-ROM, it was much more like the Kindle that I... But I did not imagine that you'd be able to download books.
Right. Your point was there would not be books anymore,
though.
And there are still books.
Well, I didn't I didn't give a time limit. So you're very much on the other side, other side of the argument. Okay,
yeah,
fair enough.
I'm sorry.
It's all right. And you've just had a birthday as well, so I'm about to have a birthday.
Yes.
Yours is a significant birthday.
Yeah.
Do you want to, and it's unbelievable, Pete. I mean, you were always 4 years older than me. So it shouldn't be a surprise.
Yeah, so people can...
So they can work it.
You do the math.
It's a big... Yeah. It's not... It's... Oh, shit. You're 60.
Yeah, I'm 60. I hit 60 the other day, and actually about 2 weeks ago.
I mean, you look good, but you've always looked really old, so it is... you've done is just look bad young.
Do I look...
So when you're old, you go, wow, you look good for 60.
Yeah, you're not bad, yeah. So like I've stayed... My face has been the same
for 25 is like, who's that wizened old man in the corner? And now it's you've finally grown into yourself. You look very good, Peter.
Oh, thank you very much. No, I was trying to think of analogies for it the other day, and I was thinking that the... It's funny because when I had my party and I told people, please come to my 60th birthday party, and then they came up and they gave me 60th birthday cards, and I was really insulted. I felt like I'd told them I was dying, and then they've just gone, ah! Like that, you know.
There's plenty of 60s still young, especially in this day and age, 60s right. still young. You know. In Hollywood, where you live now, is 60. Men are allowed to be old, right, in Hollywood.
No, the thing is, when I was young, the average lifespan of a Welsh male was 42. And so, and my son Arlo is here tonight, begged me not to make this joke, because he says it's not funny, it's just very, very sad. And I just said that 60 is the new actually being alive. I think you're right, Arlo. It's just very, very sad.
I liked it very much. Yeah. It's sad, but that's comedy. It's okay. So I've been looking for things to talk to you about that we haven't talked about. You've been on twice before, once here.
Yeah.
And once on the you were in LA, and I was talking to you in LA during the lockdown. Yeah. Absolutely incredible. Mm. And I was trying to find new things that I didn't know about you. Now, look, we all know, Peter, that you worked on the ships.
Yeah. Can we just talk about that, please?
No, I wanted to, but I didn't know, and I've got this from Wikipedia. This was easy to find.
That I that killed a man once.
you...
On a dockyard in Yokohama.
I'm sure you did. I mean, you wouldn't know, would you?
Nobody's ever known that. It's been covered up for a long time.
But when you're at the sea, you can do whatever you like. So you're in
different
ports.
No, you can't. It's the law.
You can't. You can break the law because you just get on the ship and go away again. There's a different lady in every port, a different murderer, a vagrant in every port. You were second mate on a private yacht in Monte Carlo. I did not know that.
That's amazing. Where was that? Where did you find
that? Was on Wikipedia. That was that easy to find.
Is this my... I looked at my Wikipedia page. Yeah. I only look at it like twice a day.
Yeah.
And and somebody has rewritten my Wikipedia page.
Right.
And it's much longer and it's very critical. And it's got things like, it said, they found really quotes like, whilst Bainham is not exactly British comedy royalty.
Wow!
Yes. But then it said, he is a power behind the throne. And I was still, fuck off, you know. And then also said I was one of Armando Nucci's foot soldiers.
I mean, sort of Game of Thrones in you. We could make the Peter Bainham Game of Thrones. Oh, the end on the throne at the end.
But
of
they found out that thing. Yes, I was on a yacht in Monte Carlo. I was. I joined after I was made redundant from the Merchant Navy and delightedly fled the ships. Yeah. And I got a job on a Welsh yacht. All things is Welsh, but it was a yacht called the Dragon. It was just because it was very unimaginative.
Was it like the kind of yachts in Succession? Was it that sort of thing?
Yeah, it was like a motor yacht. It wasn't that fancy, but it was like a motor yacht down in Monte Carlo. And I was hired as the second mate, but I got there and immediately demoted myself to deckhand because I thought I've just had it. I should not have any charge of anything. I should not be in charge of
Forgive my ignorance, you know, what would a second mate
do?
What would he be doing?
He would navigate. Yeah. He would have little gold bars on his shoulder.
Yeah.
He'd issue commands.
Right.
So the only thing I could do is have gold bars on my shoulder. You know.
What's the first mate doing if the second mate's doing that?
I think it was the first mate.
You were the first
mate. That Wikipedia bastard got that wrong as well. So, okay. No, I think,
who's
first
above
mate,
the first? Is it only the
captain, then the first mate, then the second mate. Third mate, yes.
Fourth mate?
No, Rich. No.
What if the third mate's got another mate?
No, I think there's the third mate, then the friend. Then the mild acquaintance. Yeah. Then the second mild acquaintance.
And I like it. There's nothing to do with sailing.
I'm with none him. Other than the deckhand.
So
I was so shit at the Merchant Navy side of it that then I just drank and rowed speedboats for 6 months.
I mean, that sounds good.
It was great. It was crazy.
That's better than working on Weekending.
Why did I go from that?
Why didn't you stay in Monte Carlo on the yacht?
I don't know. I've just reapplied, so you know, I'll go back.
There's that show which I haven't seen much of, but I've seen clips of, called Below Decks, which is all about.
I haven't seen that.
It's like a reality show, but I think it's one of those reality shows that's probably a bit scripted. Am I correct in that, young ladies?
Yeah.
they would know. So it's all about. I saw a clip. There was one. It was on Gogglebox, I think, wasn't it? This recently. So there was a new guy came and they got, and the captain was going. He was sharing with the captain. Would that happen? Like a new deckhand would come on and be in the captain's cabin?
No, that sounds like something else.
Yeah,
that
I mean,
like
because
like the Merchant Navy version of Operation U-Tree or something like that. Kind of,
the captain was very above board, but the boy came in and then they said, well, we have drinks at the first night, but don't go crazy. It's important that we're just getting to know each other. Don't go. And then the boy... Nice. Drank loads and loads, and then went to bed in the captain's mess, and then was sick all over the place in the captain's mess. So I think it was
that's pretty much what happened to me.
Is that what happened to you?
Yeah.
That's good. And did we witness anything? Was there anything? I just feel like you would have written.
But I didn't kill a man.
Yeah, I just feel like you would have witnessed something because of Succession. There's all sorts of things happen on those yachts.
On those yachts.
Yeah.
Every I time met Sandra Rhodes.
Wow.
Yes. That's all about. I witnessed Sandra Rhodes on a yacht. That's my. I'm going to go into that. I've been saving that for my retirement. That like I saw. I don't think I saw anything untoward. I didn't see any plots. I didn't see any billionaires plotting boardroom takeovers.
But surely the whole point of a yacht is again, it's you're against. There's no law. You're against all the laws.
No, again,
that's not
true.
You can do anything you want. Who's going to find the police? Aren't going to turn up, are they? And anything that's dead, you just chuck anything that's dead in the sea.
Yeah. I don't know.
Let the sea consume that.
I think they, if people died, they'd put them in the fridge. In the
fridge.
In the fridge, yeah. In the walk-in fridge. They wouldn't walk into the fridge, but they would like, yeah.
Did people ever die on the yacht?
Pardon?
Did anyone die?
Oh, no, this was on the Merchant Navy.
On the Merchant Navy. Yeah, did people die in the Merchant Navy?
Yeah, all the time.
Scurvy.
Well, flying fish kind of struck a bit. Old age.
I think like the Merchant Navy is the safe one, though, isn't it? That's the whole point of being in the Merchant Navy. You're not being. I mean, if it's a war, you're in trouble.
But. I can tell you hilarious anecdotes of how people inhaled carbon monoxide from. You know, from decomposing tallow in a thing and then just died. And
But
I'm not sure where I could take that story other than...
I'm just interested.
Yeah.
I'm just interested.
Or like, you know, somebody had a heart attack in the engine room. Instead of, you know... It's all going in my one-man show, you know.
I remember there was this one gentleman. He was only 38 and he died. And never saw his family again.
That's all I found out about you. That was the only thing that I didn't know about you that we haven't talked about before.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk to you. I mean, you may have talked about this before, but it keeps on coming up.
Yeah.
This is something that that from Alan Partridge, which you were a big part of the Alan Partridge thing. Now, there's lots of things in Alan Partridge that you invent. Monkey tennis was yours, right?
I believe so.
The boys are back in the barracks. That was yours. There's loads of things. There was a couple of bits you took from the lives of other people, like me, which we've talked about.
Yes. Did we talk about that last time?
I think so.
Talk about it again if you like.
I dropped my credit card. Mm-hmm. I was sitting in the Riverside, I think it was, in Hammersmith, and someone came up to me and said, "Excuse me, are you Richard Herring?" And I went, "I've just maybe been on TV for one." I went, They said, "You dropped your credit card."
And then imagine, you told me, and then imagine your surprise.
And it turned up. But there was all the.
It was a tribute to you.
It's fine. I'm glad it got used. there was the very famous scene of the super fan of Alan Partridge, Jed. Is it Jed?
Oh, yes.
With
the fan,
when he goes to his house and it's all decorated as Alan Partridge. Now, is this inspired by Stuart Lee going. So this is an incredible story. This is an incredible, fruitful night for Stuart Lee that I've heard from like about seven different angles now, okay? Weirdly, Stuart Lee was doing a gig and he stayed and had a drink at the gig in a student place, and then he couldn't find... Either he was locked out of his bed and breakfast or he was wandering the streets a bit lost. And someone who'd been at the gigs, one of the students been at the gig, said, "Come and sleep an hour in our flat. As he went to sleep, he was sleeping on the floor of the living room. Mm-hmm. That's where. So they said there was a bed, and it wasn't. It was just a mattress in the living room. Mm. The living room had his posters on the wall.
Right.
First of all, so that was a bit creepy. And the students were watching the porn film Animal Farm, which is what it sounds like. And he then wrote that inspired that night inspired him to write a routine about having sex with a pig and stuff. Mm. That and then going into space, that then became part of his novel, The Perfect Fool, I think. Mm-hmm. Did it also inspire the Alan Partridge song?
I don't, honestly, so these people say in court, I don't remember, Your Honor. I genuinely don't remember. I don't think so. Because
right.
I think it even, because there were a couple of the storylines that existed before my tenure on it. There were a few, you know, a couple of storylines for about the first three or four episodes were, this is when you go, oh, that's episode number six, Pete, you know. But I don't think so. I think it predated it, but I might, you know.
The student who had invited Stuart Lee into the place in the first place...
is here tonight.
...was the DJ, Christian O'Connell.
Oh, my God. Right.
And someone texted me, someone tweeted me the other day... Yeah. When I was talking about the tour, and guests said, well, I stayed in that flat that Stuart Lee came to with Christian O'Connell. So he might be a guest in a future series, so we'll get his. I mean, that's weird. That's like a weird night where even if it didn't inspire Alan Partridge, all those things happened, and it was Christian O'Connell and Stuart Lee.
As a detail.
And Stuart Lee was trying to sleep.
Has everyone else become like a DJ?
Maybe, I don't know. Maybe it was just something about that night that got everyone together. Okay, well, that's interesting. And a couple of people asked this on Twitter of you. What has become of Donny Oddlegs from Fist of Fun?
Donny Oddlegs, Arlo, my son, knows about Donny Oddlegs. Donny Oddlegs is rotting in my office in my house in LA in a little glass dome that my wife bought to immortalise him in.
Right.
And his stomach has burst open.
Wow.
And there's just this, like... spongy mold bursting out of his belly, and he smells really,
really terrible. You meant to put them in under glass so that doesn't happen, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, but it wasn't that. It wasn't like a well. It was just like a glass dome put on top of him. Yeah. So he's looking really bad, and you know, your thoughts and prayers will be appreciated this time.
And we did burn him in a bin as well in the Fist of Fun. Well, that was it. Wasn't the real one. There we go. Yeah. There's a. Mm. How do you live in LA now?
Yeah.
How are there any similarities between LA and Balham? Can you think of anything that's the same?
We've probably both got a Gales, I think.
Right.
not at all.
No.
It's a big.
I mean, we did definitely talk about that last time. The kind of leap to what got you to America.
Yes.
But it's like. You know, it's an astonishing story, and not an undeserved story. Mm. Like, you have been the power behind the throne, I would say, of so much of British comedy, and you've obviously gone to work...
But not exactly comedy.
Not exactly comedy royalty.
Slightly.
You've gone to work with Sacha Baron Cohen, obviously, and worked with him on lots of films, but also done loads of other movie scripts. You've worked with Adam Sandler, which I've definitely talked to you about before.
Oh, yeah.
I'm obsessed with Adam Sandler.
Yes.
So it's an incredible journey to go from you know, the Merchant Navy to the Oscars. I was reading Jenna Friedman's latest book called Not Funny, and she was one of the writers on the Oscar-nominated Borat film, the script that you got nominated for the script. She doesn't mention you.
Right.
But she did. She did mention.
I'm not going to mention her in my.
Okay, don't mention her in your book. Okay. But she mentioned going to like the Oscars stuff. But it was during COVID, right? When you got nominated this time.
Yes.
She said there's like a pre party. Did you go to this pre party where they give you stuff? It's just like a market.
It was really weird.
Yeah.
And because I've been lucky, because I've gone to an actual Oscars ceremony. You know, the previous one in 2007, which was glamorous, and there's celebrities, and there's, oh my God, there's Clint Eastwood, and there's all these people. And you go to this one, and it was in a train station in LA, in Union Station. And I was there with my wife, Sarah, and we get there, and because of the COVID thing, they bring you in this area, you're outdoors, there's like goodie bags, weird things, and you sit out in these fake kind of glamorous chairs, but outside in a closed... It was a closed-down train station. Right. And then they took you into the main room, like at the ticketing hall. Right. Like, and for your bit where you might get an award. And the thing is, the two times with that, and any time I've ever been nominated for anything, even if this fuck-all chance of winning it, I'm, like, definitely going, it could be us. Well, it could be
exciting.
Us.
You know, exciting,
but you look at what you're up against, and it's just so silly, and so I'm not able to enjoy it and I'm all the time. But we, because they couldn't have many people in the room, in the space, they put you in a... They put you in this weird little area where you sit with this kind of cheap lamp next to you, and then you just hear you hear yourself not win the award.
Yeah.
But because they couldn't have that many people... they couldn't have everyone in the space for the whole time because they had a limit on numbers of people because of COVID.
Yeah.
As soon as we didn't win, they just go, get out quick. They had to bring the next people in.
Yeah.
And then you took you out and then you go into like another area. And then the people who did win the Oscars walk past with their Oscar in their hand. And it's weird. You just think, I should think I got nominated for an Oscar, but you just stand there next to somebody with an Oscar going, they got an Oscar. and you just feel worse about yourself. Like, you know, two times Oscar loser Peter Bainham. You know, so it's like, and it made me think the whole thing, even though I go to those things and I'm fundamentally shallow, you know, they're so, it's so silly, the whole thing. That, like, you,
I mean, that's...
Obviously, it's not a new observation, but pitting... Borat against a Martin Scorsese film, which of these, or Borat against any other, like, which of these is better? Like, like this, if there was an object, maybe there could be some objective measurement, maybe an AI could actually calculate AI which of these is better than, then, and the ceremony will be 3 minutes long. And
it's a weird, this feels like a if you didn't know COVID was happening, if someone told you in 2007, next time you're going to be here, you're going to be walking through a train station, you go, this is a dream, right? Yes. So I'm getting an Oscar at the train station, then I'm late for my train, and then I have to, it's like, that is so, and such an unpredictable, bizarre thing to happen. Yeah. But, you know, you possibly, with that film, you possibly influenced the race to the White House because you did them.
But I want an Oscar. I would rather have an Oscar. I'd rather not.
You stopped Donald Trump being
president. Well, we did a little bit, you know. Although, funnily enough, one of the things that we influenced a tiny tenth of a percent was that the papers were about to run hugely with the whole Hunter Biden laptop story.
Yeah.
And then because we got Rudy Giuliani in our movie and fooled him and he took his trousers down, that knocked we felt at a key point it knocked Hunter Biden off the story, which could be damaging to Joe Biden. But then you look at it and you go, Hunter Biden's actually quite bad. So I think, you know,
it's all relative. You know, I think you made a slightly less bad politician get in than the one that might have got in. Yes. But then next time, because he lost, there'll be a much worse one in, or him again. So, you know, you can't really win. Mm. It's like it's amazing in America the things you can do and then just carry on with your career, isn't it? In Britain, you wouldn't, you'd taken your trousers down.
Yeah.
if Rishi Sunak took his trousers down, do you think he'd be still Prime Minister the next day? I don't know. Maybe he would nowadays. Boris Johnson, Rishi Sunak, maybe not.
Well, the funny thing about Rudy Giuliani after that, we thought, we've got him. We've got Rudy Giuliani now. But then, like you say, he just kept going. But then he did way worse things, and he ended up with mascara, or dye glue running down his face. Yeah. At a press conference, and he thought,
the Four Seasons one?
Yeah.
We used to do, we had a joke in Time General Police, which was the guy getting water poured on and his dye leaking down his face, and it was exactly the same joke. Amazing. So there we go. Right, but it was happening in real life. Maybe everything's a dream, Pete. Have you thought about that? Maybe life is just a dream.
I think life's a dream.
I mean, do you not feel, feel, I mean, I know you've lived your life and so it's progressed, but does it not feel crazy to think that, you know, at 16 you were on a big ship with people having heart attacks in engine rooms and being put in a fridge, and now you live in LA and nearly won an Oscar?
Yeah. It's, yeah.
Does that not feel insane?
If you
insane?
Put it that way,
I mean, it feels insane.
If I lived my life at that way, I'd have some kind of breakdown, you know, if I went
if you 60. Just leapt through time from that one to this one.
Yeah.
Do you think you'd be able to...
Yeah.
process that fact.
It's weird, but you just go through your life. Most of your life is annoying, isn't it? So you're just like just late for something, or you can't do a poo, or you kind of you're an Uber, and it, you know, and you feel a little bit sick, and then that's most of life. Or the man didn't come to bring the thing this morning. He said between 8 and 12, and it's 10 past 12. And, you know, or like the Airbnb. I've just been to a horrible Airbnb.
Yeah.
I've been to the worst Airbnb of anyone's life.
Really?
For the last
eight days on our visit.
Oh, my God. Like,
did they not give you free gifts like at the Oscars?
I don't know. It's going to turn out to be things like, there were only four Nespresso capsules. Oh my God, like the Bose system, you know, they didn't have the right connection. I'll try not. Is it all right to talk about, is it all right to hijack your podcast for
the
show
for
this? Yeah, yeah. We got there and it was a company that managed the, it's probably libelous, you know.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah. No, we got there. Yeah, fine. No, it's true. We got to, this is last Monday, we got there with my family. We'd been horribly delayed flying from family in Chicago, and and our flight had been delayed 9 hours. We were horribly jet lagged. We got to, the company, as part from the thousands you pay for the Airbnb, they charge you £50 to have a man meet you at the front door to give you the keys at the flat. So it's not. And we got there, and there was this very nice man who, he was actually very nice, and it wasn't his fault. And I'll call him Steve. Okay. And he's there with three sets of keys, and he says, none of these keys work for the flat.
Right.
Can you have a try? And I was like, my wife's much better at coping with those things than I am. And I was like, really, like... And then we eventually got... Sarah managed to work one of the keys after about 5 minutes of getting... We got into the flat. And then it was just a thing. Like, it was advertised as a four-person flat. It was this four of me and my wife and our two kids. And it was a three-bedroom flat. And eventually they sent a terrible air bed. And then we found out the fridge didn't work. And we left yesterday, literally nearly having a breakdown. The fridge still didn't work.
It's lucky none of you died.
It stunk of mould. Actually, my 10-year-old did die.
Okay. That would put it.
Are you delighted that my 10-year-old...
I can't think of anyone that would delight me more if anyone had to die.
Well, if it delights you, then I think we're square now, you know. Yeah. What is the value of a life of a grandfather versus a 10-year-old?
Yeah, and that's not nice, is it?
No.
I mean, in a way, none of that.
You shouldn't
whole
get into competitive
nice
thing about what's a who should. No. Right. Anyway, but it was horrible, and it was moldy, and it was disgusting, and I realise now it doesn't really carry that much weight. This story.
No. You know. It just shows what LA Ponce you've become.
Yeah.
Compared.
Yeah. I wanted a fridge. You've changed, Peter. We didn't have a fridge in Balham, Pete.
We probably didn't. Yeah. Not once it got flooded by Terry Johnson. Yeah. There wasn't even an international playwright living above us.
Yes.
What's going on? World famous.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Let me ask you some emergency questions.
Okay.
And see what goes on with that.
Yeah. Did you say basic questions or
emergency questions?
Emergency questions.
They're called. I'm going to do you. I'm going to do some of the AI ones. They're not very good. Okay. So my job is safe. This is quite apt for you, and you might. This wasn't created for you. If you had to create a new type of breakfast cereal, what would you call it, and what would it contain? Very sensible question from AI.
Okay, then. Bonios. Yes.
Like dog biscuits. Or bones.
There is a thing called Bonio, isn't there? Yeah.
There was something like that.
Okay, then.
You want to make a cereal out of bones?
I don't know, I'm panicking. Purple Priuses. Small blackberry flavoured Prius. Toyota Prius shaped snacks. That dissolve when you put milk on them. They actually vanish. They don't. They were never there. And all, it's not like they get mixed up in the milk. They just gone. Kellogg's purple Priuses.
And they don't turn the milk purpley.
No, the milk's just saber. And the box is gone. All you can think of, and you tell people there was, and the people say, "I don't know what you're talking about." You know.
Good. Okay. Another AI one. That was a good AI one. They're not all very good, I have to say. Would you rather have a giant chicken that could fly, but would always poop on your head whenever you pass it, or a pet rhinoceros that would follow you everywhere but always try to steal your food?
I think the rhinoceros.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, because of the lack of poop.
I don't know. I mean, would it wherever you went, would it just adjust its size? Not like the purple prison. would it go through that? Would it be able to get through doors and things like that? Or would your movement through life be limited by? I can't do this meeting. I don't think
it would shapeshift. I think it would just try to find a way in wherever you'd gone.
Right.
And that you might get in, or it might be able to knock down a wall or come through a window.
Okay. You might be able to get, if you've got a meeting, you could get in, go up the lift and get back. But you're having the meeting and it'd still be just ramming its head against the thing like that. And
rhinoceros couldn't climb up a wall. Of glass.
I don't know. This is a rhinoceros that follows you everywhere.
It might just wait outside for you to come out again. It's only trying to steal your
patiently wait outside. Yeah.
Okay. Let me do some human created ones.
Okay.
This is quite a new one. I think you might not have anything else because we had discussed school sports backstage. What are your memories of school sports day? Did you ever participate? I did not participate
in sports. Me and my friends, from about the age of 12, made a mutual unspoken decision with the sports teacher that we would not be involved in sports, but that you couldn't make that a formal agreement. It wasn't like a formal lettering. My client refuses to participate in sports. But this is rugby, you see, and this is like, and I'm not really a rugby kind of person. Wales still is a huge rugby culture. And so we would just... when they were picking the teams and all that sort of stuff, we would just retreat back with our goodies annuals and our Monty Python books and go and to the other end of the field and sort of try and blend in with the goalposts and quote Monty Python or quote the goodies, and that's what we did. You know, so, but sports day was a fantasy to us.
I mean, that's difficult because, you know, you are if you're little, like both of us are, with rugby, you have to be able to run really fast. Yes. That's all. You can be the scrum half or nothing, really, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I remember, like, a ball being thrown to me and just running, seeing it coming towards me, seeing the ball coming towards me at the same time as other bigger boys running at me, and just no. So I was so terrible at sports, you know.
Still look
whilst trying to convince my son Arlo to be more involved in sports,
right?
Spoken, I bragged on stage about getting out of sports.
Do they do? So do they have sports days in America? Is that a thing? Is it? Is it the schools? Do the kids?
They don't have that kind of whole like. Oh, it's the big. I don't think they have the big. They all have different. Yeah. They're very competitive, and they all like, you know, they you know.
Yeah. But you know, those kids who were good at sport.
Yeah.
That was all they had, Pierre.
Yeah.
And then their whole life, that was the best. Yeah. I mean, I hated it at school.
Yes.
Because I wasn't good at sport, but I was clever.
Mm. Yeah.
But you weren't allowed to go, I'm clever, but you could go, I'm brilliant at football and everyone would love you.
But do you find, like, with your kids, like, do you feel you hypocritically encourage them to do sports? Or do you think, no, I didn't do sports and I turned out great, you know?
They seem like they might. My family's weird because there's, you know, there's skills that are in, you know, skip generation. So both my parents and my wife's parents are quite sporty.
Right.
But neither of us were sporty. Mm. So I think some of it's passed through. My daughter plays football and I really enjoy watching her play football. Mm. She's a very brave. All the other players are boys.
Yes.
And she plays defender and she's fucking fearless.
Nice.
So I really enjoy seeing her tackling all these boys and them being beaten by her.
Yeah, right. Whereas you were fearful.
I was full of fear. I mean, I still participate. I didn't go and hide in. I wouldn't have been able to. Mm. Imagine doing that in other classes, just doing maths and just disappearing, camouflaging yourself against a bunsen burner or something.
I did do that in other things, you know.
Were you an academic? Because you're very smart,
kind
man.
Of. Well, thank you very much.
Well, but then you were in the Merchant Navy at 16, so you obviously left school.
I was accepted into the Merchant Navy at 15.
Right.
Which is insane. It's completely insane. You know, like my kid's 15 and like thinking, my God, I was like, when I was your age, I was joining an organisation of tattooed racists. And going on a ship and just being in like weird places and being in hurricanes and stupid shit that you should never do at that age, obviously. But it was a really big Catholic school where one kid, John Spillane, went to Cambridge, you know, in my year, and I think he was the only one that the teachers were remotely interested in. Right. And the rest of us were just like pushed through that whole conveyor belt of it all.
Yeah.
And so I did okay. I did my O levels and I did some, you know. I did my Mr. Buckstead character that I used to do, I based on my maths teacher, Mr. Hughes. I think it's where, like, you know, I got an A, but literally only because everyone was so utterly shit scared to fail because they'd have to go back to Mr. Hughes's class, you know, and it was so terrifying. I thought about it, he's the man who got his fist that far from my face. I'm this far from hitting you, Bainham, because I didn't have my log tables with me or something like that, or got his hand around my throat. So, like, just crazy shit, you know.
It was different times.
It was different time, yeah. It's all changed, hasn't it?
You're not allowed to punch kids anymore.
Yeah, no, you can't. Yes.
It was a better time. It's annoying to have been the kids that got punched and not be able to then punch the kids in turn. That seems unfair. You got the punch and you don't get the fun of punching a child.
But it all comes back, Rich. You know, things, you know, it'll all be like, you know, it's all cyclical, you know?
But then it'll come back and then the kids will be able to hit old people. That's what it is. So it'll be, we got that first, then we'll die, and then it'll go, now you can hit kids again.
Yeah.
Too late for us.
Let's not encourage it.
How did you cope with that? I mean, that's, you know, I have, again, read about you being amongst all these fascist men, but like ultra-fascist men in the Navy. Mm. How did you come out of that? Like, going into that at 15, you could easily have been taken into that world and I mean, you know, when I met you, you didn't seem, you were a bit racist, but you didn't seem that... But it was the 90s. You seemed very well adjusted.
It was
in person.
Quiet.
But how did you get through those years?
I don't know. It was just weird to be. I mean, I guess. I mean, I wasn't from the world that these people were from, and I think I would just do. You know, when you go out for a drink with some people, and you might get on with them.
Yeah.
And you find them funny, and they find you funny, and you go out for a drink with other bunch of people, and they. you just think, I'm not funny anymore. Yeah. And I'd have 6 months of that where I'd just go, and occasionally I'd be on a trip with like some funny people who weren't horrible and weren't racist. They'd be tattooed. But there was just an edgy machismo to the whole world that never. So I think I got through certain trips by just making that whole thing of making people laugh. Because I was never the class clown at school. I was completely very invisible at school. Like nobody remembers me from school, you know. But then when I got there, I think it was when I first began to like, oh, I can cope in this situation by making people laugh, you know.
And so was that, because how did you go from, you know, you went to Monte Carlo, you came back.
Yes.
What was the impetus that made you go, right, I'm going to go and try and write for the radio? What made you think you could do that, and why did you do that?
Well, I was made redundant. I did my weird, you know, thing in Monte Carlo for 6 months, and then and left that, and then had a vague idea of something creative, and I had no idea what that was. And so I went to London, and I stayed with my sister Charlie, and just did graphic design for a bit, and worked for a company called Economic Plumbing and Roofing, just apologising for the terrible atrocities. I was like telesales, and I'd ring up and I'd go like, you know, hey, I'm calling from Economic Plumbing and Roofing. You're fucking plumber! You know, and it was a horrible, terrible, really scary job. And so did those jobs, you know, those jobs that people do, you know, and just those. And then I got, I guess, to... Oh, that's right, and I'm staying with Charlie, and then one day Charlie said, that's right, I tried to do acting and I did a night school course and this company called the Stanhope Theatre Company, and they put on like stage productions and things like that. And and it was just, it was a laugh, you know. But then anyway, Charlie said to me one day, hey, I've seen this in the back of Time Out, and it was an ad for Kit Hollaback's comedy improv workshop at the comedy store.
Wow.
And that was on Saturday afternoons, and I went there, and there was Paul Merton, Mike Myers, and Neil Malarkey, Julian Clary, and just all these amazing people, you know. It's like, and I'd just never seen anything like it. And I think I've talked to you about this before. That, like, did you ever have the book From Fringe to Flying Circus as a kid? It's so weird how so many people, like, you know, from our generation, had that book as a kid. And I think did you say you read that book as a kid?
Yeah, I read that.
I thought, I'm going to do that.
Yeah, well, it was basically the blueprint of...
Yeah, it was,
you know,
like,
so that was what
tree.
Made me want to go... You know, I only wanted to go to Oxford because Michael Palin went to Oxford, and, you know, I thought maybe if I was in some dream scenario happened, I'd be able to do comedy there.
Yeah,
and I didn't think it would happen. But, yeah, so that was entirely the...
Yeah, this roadmap to, you know, to a comedy career. Yeah. And I think I just thought it was a work of fiction. I just read all this stuff, and this is how the Python started. This is how the Goodies started. This is like Beyond the Fringe, Dudley Moore, Peter. And I just think no part of my 14-year-old self, it just didn't. It wasn't like I don't think I thought, oh, I couldn't do that. It just didn't. It was like me thinking, I think I'll be a bus, you know. I think I saw a bus. I think I'll do that. It wouldn't occur to you to be a bus, you know. Unless you're trying to escape a hippo, a rhino that's following you around. But like, it's so when I got to London, it just, none of those things had occurred. I think it just seemed almost mythical to go into that career. Like some weird part, you know, I don't think I was so stupid that I thought actors weren't real. but anyway, so then I went to this comedy workshop, and then I saw that.
And
then
so were those people like doing the teaching, or
I was in a baby junior group that everyone could go to this workshop and take part.
Yeah, yeah.
But then there were evident brilliant people there who were very experienced, who were they were the Comedy Store players, actually. Yeah, that's what it was. And I think the idea was that if you were good enough from the junior people that you might get invited into the Comedy Store players. Right, but amazing. I was never really an improviser. But the thing was that lots of those people were doing the stand-up circuit, or the nascent.
Yeah.
Is that a word?
Nascent is fine.
And I think I didn't realise that the young ones had come from that world. I wasn't very well researched or whatever.
Right.
And so then I thought, all right, I'm going to do stand-up. And that's when I came up with my hilarious comedy character, Mr. Buxton.
Yeah.
Pummeled away at it for 5 years and then eventually got the message and stopped doing this.
Well, I remember, we were just talking backstage about Edinburgh and the last time you did Edinburgh, but I remember your shows in Edinburgh being like spectacular. I remember the Monsters in the Attic being like one of those. So you'd book out the there was like a tiny room.
Yes.
Which I think we first did this morning, Rich Not Judy up there. We did a couple of the early shows out there. Right. And when it was, now you go to the Pleasants and they found cupboards that you can do.
Oh, God. You
wouldn't believe how many more venues. If you went back, every year you go back and they found another space within that building that is now a venue. And some of them are, smaller than this.
A coffin or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, really, some of them are just unbelievably small. But that was the smallest sort of venue, the attic.
Yeah.
And you just sort of, was it improvised or was it sort of...
Yeah, it was a one-off. It was a one-off right at the end because I used to go to... I was sharing a flat with, I think it was Woody Bob Muddy and Boothby Graffo.
Yeah.
And I used to come back drunk, as you do in Edinburgh, whilst we were all sharing and doing the show, we're doing the Avalon show. And then I'd come back and I'd start doing, monsters, pterodactyls or raptors. And I'd stagger around and I'd do that kind of, so I'd try and do it now.
Yeah.
But it was like this sort of...
It was amazing.
Yeah, and I'd walk around the flat going like... Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. But I do that.
He's 60 years old, then, man. 60.
Yes. Ladies and gentlemen. So I started to do that, and I was better at it then. And they thought it was really funny, and then they persuaded me to put on a whole.
It's amazing, that's an amazing thing. Like, especially now when you go to Edinburgh, which I sort of don't want to do anymore. But I don't think that could happen. That someone would put a show on at the end of the Fringe where I've come up with an idea during the Fringe. And that's what the Fringe should be. And I feel that happy. There was occasionally people did like a bonus show. I mean, I remember in the summer like Jogget year, which was like a lot later than that. I'd done this show where there was a 20-minute routine about yogurt, and I said, I'm going to do like an hour of that routine, rather than 20 minutes. Yeah. So I did a whole night of that, but no one, six people came to watch it, which made it kind of better in a way that I stretched this routine out for an hour. But, it was very rare that anyone thought, within it now, it would be or sort of...
I mean, that show wasn't really properly rehearsed or anything.
No.
Because this weird thing happened at the end of it where it was just this tiny room and everyone's really excited and I'm going up and humping people and and just doing horrible, and then at the end, and I was so nervous before the show that I'd eaten a huge bag of Edinburgh chips and and sausage, and then at the last thing I did on the show, the last monster I did like a real thing like this, and then the lights came down and I thought, oh my God, I'm going to throw. And I actually spontaneously vomited on the stage. And I crawled off the stage. And some genius lighting person brought the lights back up, and I was gone, and there was just a pile of vomit. And people thought it was like, this is incredible. This is like Stephen Berkoff or something. This is like some brilliant bit of, oh my God, what? How did he manufacture the vomit? And I think the noise, and it was... I tried to do it once again at Club Zarathustra, and it was like, I couldn't throw up again. So I think I defecated instead.
I remember those. It's so unbelievable. That's like 30 years ago.
Is it very different now, though, the whole Fringe?
It's so expensive to go there for everyone. Yes. And, we struggled. We all struggled to, none of us had any money at that stage. And we'd lose a couple of grand maybe to putting on a show. And you'd make it back because you'd get a job or it would sort of just about be worth it. But you couldn't do that now.
Yeah.
It costs so much to go, and it costs so much to go as a punter. That's just what I felt last year. Was just I couldn't really count.
How many have you done now?
I mean, there was a few years I didn't do, so I can't. It's more than 25.
Wow.
But that might be it. I might have been done, but I feel like if I do another stand-up, I'll do when I'm 60 in 4 years' time, because I've done
unimaginable.
I mean, it felt like a long way away, but. Yeah. And more than halfway there from the last one. I did a show at 40 and 50, so I feel like, it'd be a shame not to take that 60 show to Edinburgh, at least for a bit. And I might I mean, I'm going to tour a show next year, but maybe I'll pop up for it. But literally, it's like £1,000 a day to stay. If you take your family,
wow,
it's like £1,000 a day to stay anywhere, really.
To
accommodation, like anything.
As a performer, or as an attendee?
Both, you know.
Oh, my God.
I mean, last year I was there for 10 days and got my mother-in-law a hotel room and we were in a two-bedroom flat and it cost £10,000.
Oh, my God. And that's the accommodation. Is that as on top of the show?
Yeah, top of everything else. Yeah. So that's just the accommodation.
Oh, my God.
Which when we, I mean, I don't know, did we share a flat in Edinburgh ever?
I don't think so.
We did, no.
I don't think so.
But when, you know, we would it
I
be
saw somebody on Twitter accusing me of doing something.
Oh, yeah, breaking kettle. Some, yeah, yeah that yeah, you weren't, it was Stuart.
No. I am not the unnamed comedian who
no,
was like this.
That was me, Stuart. It's either me, Stuart, Chris Addison, Richard Thomas, maybe Dan Topolsky was there that year. Somebody punched in all the cupboards in the kitchen. It was Stuart Lee. It was definitely.
Have your glasses broken during this interview?
My glasses are broken during this, but they've broken before. I'm just trying to mend them as we go. But it's only my reading glasses. Problem is, I need my reading glasses to be able to see.
This is gold. This is like.
There's a screw there.
Yes.
I don't know if I have to screw it in or it'll just go.
Yes.
I think we'll just do that.
Yeah. That's fun. Comedy. That's actual comedy.
That is. Hey! All right, I'm going to ask you another emergency question. Yeah. That was nice. If I've asked this, I haven't asked you many emergency questions in our previous encounters. I don't think. If you could go into any art gallery in the world or museum, if they said we love Peter Bain and we loved Hotel Transylvania,
yes,
we think you're amazing.
Peter Bain and Hotel Transylvania.
Love that. We want you to take anything from any museum or art gallery. You can keep it. As a reward of being our favourite comedian, what would you choose to keep from all the museums and art galleries in the world? It could be anything.
It could be
a work of art, or it can be something from a museum that you like, or it can be
It could be the Mona Lisa, and then I could sell that on the open market.
That's what you could do.
That's my really boring answer.
Really boring answer. Yeah. There's probably something, if you want to sell something, it's probably something.
Or the David. Is it the David?
Michelangelo's David would probably be worth a lot.
Yeah,
the Colosseum in Rome, you could just sell that.
Right. I'd sell it on eBay. Would you just put it on?
Good.
Or on Craigslist.
Good to know.
Who's got that?
I've asked you the human centipede question. I know that. That's the only question I think I've asked you. Mm. Have you ever tried to suck your own cock?
No. No.
Sure?
Well, actually... I'm so old, I can't remember whether I told you this in the dressing room or on this stage. But I've never had sex in a dream.
Yes, you did tell me that on backstage.
Yes, there you go. I've never had sex in a dream.
What? I mean, that's a waste. Once you're married, that's it. That's your little...
Yes.
It really annoys me when I have a dream now I'm married that I'm about to have sex and then some. It often does go wrong, I have to tell you. Because even in your dream, you think, I shouldn't really be doing this.
Right.
But sometimes you forget you're married.
Yes.
And... it's a shame if you can't, you know, if you can't even do it in a dream. What kind of power?
Yeah, I've never consummated the act. Yes, which was frustrating before I had sex.
Yeah,
and like that was devastating because I felt like a Nostradamus type prediction of my future. But
but you know, you couldn't if you haven't had sex, then you couldn't really dream back because you couldn't necessarily imagine. I remember thinking I'm reading Catlin Moran's book about how to be a man at the moment, which is like from a woman's point of view. But it's made me think a lot about those years when you are a teen. No, when I didn't, I didn't lose my virginity till I was nearly 20.
Mm-hmm.
And I genuinely thought, like, throughout my whole teenage years, I am definitely going to die a virgin. Like, it was just definite. I mean, I thought, I didn't think I would be 80, and I thought, I'm going to die at 17 and no one's going to ever have had sex with me.
It's a terrifying, I remember that.
And it was so important.
Yes.
Turned out to be wrong. I've had sex 4 times. It's worked out
in a dream.
Pretty well. But it's sort of amazing, you know, those years are so... It's so weird thinking about the... You know, we grew up in sort of the same period, 70s and 80s, and the different... It is those differences in the way we talked about things and thought about things and how it was all... that. You know, it was like... All the films are about, all the teen films are about sort of tricking girls into having sex with you or creating robots that you could fuck. I mean, that might be where it's come from for me. You know, it's making weird science or something. When you watch something like Weird Science, that's such a strange film about two teenage boys creating a woman to fuck. you know, and it was such a weird environment where we didn't talk about, you know, that the truth about anything, well, no one advised us about anything like that, wasn't it?
Yeah, all that whole Yeah, and just old movies, like 60s movies with, like, you know, you think about Sid James now. He'd be locked up, wouldn't he? That character, oh,
But all Hollywood romantic films were about someone lying or, you know, I mean, pretending. Yeah. There'd be some trick that you would have to do. It was never like women like you and want to have sex with you. So it's like such a weird upbringing, which is, I think, why the world is so... our generation of men, especially, are so fucked up and doing such weird things.
Yes,
and
it's going, their fault. It's and the going, movie's fault.
It's that environment. It's a weird thing. Mm. Yeah, just by the by. Mm? Let's ask you another emergency question. Now my glasses don't work. I can't ask you any emergency question. What is the sexiest TV puppet, would you think? Can you... Talking of the 1980s and 70s. Is there a puppet? I know.
Probably Sooty.
Sooty? Because he can't speak, is that what he is?
I think because he's fundamentally, he's a hand.
I'd go for, if I was going for one of the Sooty or Sweep gang, I'd think it'd have to be Sweep.
Oh, you're not Sooty?
No, Sweep.
Really?
He just looks like a lot more fun, Sweep.
Right, and Sweep's naughty.
And the squeakings.
Sweep. Yeah,
I think Sue was quite judgmental, and she was the only one who could actually talk.
Right,
and I think she would just say, "What? That's why you're doing it like that." Whereas Sweet would just go, "The more you fucked it." So, but I wouldn't.
I'm worried that I liked Sooty because Sooty said nothing. So I don't know why I would be drawn to somebody and find somebody sexy when they don't say anything.
That. He's a strong, silent type.
Yeah,
I've got a Sooty at home. If you want to give it a go, I don't have an.
I should say Donny Oddlegs. You know,
Donny Oddlegs. Yes, he wasn't very sexy, though, was he?
Yeah, that's not why he's burst open, by the way.
it's weird. He's got all mouldy inside. He smells. Smells really weird. No one can understand it.
He's developed some strange genitals that look almost as if they've been sewn on, like, you know.
Glasses are falling off my face. Right, we'll do one more.
Okay.
I don't think I've asked this. I quite like having this bit of my glasses.
Yeah. This could be when this might be a chat show host.
That could be my gimmick. He's got broken glasses and he uses one of the... What are these called? The stems?
It should be a political version with your glasses like this going, I put it to you, Prime Minister.
When we get the Prime Minister.
Andrew Neil, definitely.
I don't think I've asked this question. It's a similar question to the last one. If you had to have sex with a TV or film snowman or woman, which famous snowman or woman would you have sex with and how would you guard against gentle frostbite?
But famous snowman or woman, aren't they all in the snowman? I mean, so... Or who's the guy in...
There's Jack Frost.
Frozen.
Yeah. Frozen Olaf.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of Olaf, really. No.
There's there must be more than...
No, it's not my type. No offence to him, but not my type. It might be the snowman, I guess.
My observation about the snowman, I don't know if this is a... You know, I don't know how many observations there are. I'm doing it in my... there's a routine in my current show where I build a snowman with my daughter as when I'm trying to make memories with her when I think I was about to die. The snowman, at the end of the snowman, the snowman's melted, right? It's disappeared. Yeah. But all the snow is still on the ground.
Right.
But that's not how it happens. The snowman is the last thing to go. So it suggests, I don't know if this is intentional, it suggests that the snowman's just fucked off.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't like... David Bowie is the... If you're really going to be old school, the boy is David Bowie.
Right.
When it was first on,
yes.
Do you remember David Bowie coming? When I was a nipper, he has the scarf and there's a little filmed intro to the snowman with David Bowie going.
Oh my God! No, I didn't
remember when I was. I can't do the impression.
Well, and they put that on as a kind of way to sell it.
I remember it. I was a snow, and I had this scarf. And then, so that little boy's David Bowie. So the snowman hated David Bowie so much he pretend he took off all his clothes and chucked them on the floor like John Stonehouse. And when you think how cold a snowman is...
Yes. It's quite sinister. It makes you think the snowman's still there. And that boy will grow up and the snowman will just be occasionally just watching.
Hiding behind the tree. And there's a snowman on a motorbike.
Just listening in. Maybe like he's got... cameras, like the boy stays in an Airbnb and the snowman's put cameras in there watching him. I feel like I'm soiling a lot of people's memories now.
Right. Well, we've nearly finished. I was going to talk about the harpoon up my sleeve.
Oh.
We haven't talked about the harpoon, which was fantastic. You used to write one-liners for Terry Wogan. That was another thing I'd forgotten about.
Yes, Friday Night with Wogan, yes.
We're disappointed he couldn't deliver your one-liners well enough.
Done.
That's what it says on Wikipedia.
I was disappointed that he couldn't.
Didn't deliver them very well. That's what it says on Wikipedia.
No, I don't.
Well, you know, he's a national treasure.
This is this fucking guy, whoever this person is.
Someone's out there.
Shit. I wonder if they made up the quotes about me. Do they make up that, whilst not exactly British comedy royalty?
Oh my God! Yeah,
was it you?
He was a cunt to Terry Wogan. It was me. What have you got coming up? Are you doing more? Are you doing more kids films? Are you working with Sasha again?
No, not a lot. I'm on strike at the moment.
Of course you are. Yeah.
Yes. So
how's that going?
It's kind of boring, you know. Yeah, it's like exciting, and you're like, yeah, you know, just with a placard. The funny thing about being on strike is that, you know, in movies, bad depictions of people picketing,
yeah,
they have signs. And the signs are all like the signs have been written out by the same props person.
Yes, yes.
And they walk in a perfect circle.
Yeah.
You know. And the funny thing is, that's what pickets actually look like. They're exactly like that. They're very unrealistic.
Right. It's good to know that. But you mustn't make observations, because that still counts as writing. So
if you're on strike
and you're noticing stuff.
Only if you pay me, but you gave me some green tea,
okay, so
technically I'm a scab.
Yeah. You know. You're allowed to think of things, but you're just not allowed to write them down for money. That's fair enough.
But no, I'm writing a book with Arlo, my kid. And
oh, cool.
Yeah. Just here.
What? If you had to choose between living in LA and Balham, which you have done, which would you choose to live in?
Now that it has a Gales.
Yeah.
Balham. I was in Balham the other day. I mean, it was ridiculous, but like, it's so like not, you know, I know we talked ad nauseum about this, but like, it's very different, but it was quite nice. I mean, the sun was shining.
It was really nice.
Do you remember when we lived
there, they put on the wall of the station, they put up those big metal kind of depictions of Balham life.
Yeah.
And there's a little TV in one of the pictures with a face that I think looks like your face. Do you think it's you?
Well, Stuart Lee convinced me that it was me.
Right.
And kept telling me over and over again back in the 90s, kept saying, Pete, there's you. You are on that mural on the side. And I kept saying to him, stop telling me that. And then he actually got quite offended that I wouldn't believe that I was depicted on a mural at Balham Station. And he went on a bit so much that one day I said, okay. He said, you don't believe? I said, I believe you. And then he just went, ah! He just worn me down. So, yeah, but there isn't.
I think
maybe
it's you.
Me, you know.
I think it's you. Yeah. Okay, I'd
Balham. I'd live in Balham.
It's beautiful in Balham.
Yeah. And I'm kind of
a pizza,
little bit fed up with Balham.
There's a Pizza Express now.
Oh, yeah. There's fancy. There's a bar, there's a cafe called Milk where there was a giant line of people. This is so boring, sorry.
We'll just cut it out. We can end it and then just carry on talking.
Yeah, yes. Just let these people go home. It's 4 a.m. and we're just...
Yeah. Mentioning things that are in Balham. It could be a podcast series.
Yeah.
Just Richard Herring and Peter Bainham get together just to say some things.
The safe way to say Waitrose now, isn't it? It used to be a
saying.
And the car park's still there, whatever like that. And I used to rent an office up a building, and that building is completely gone. It was on the fourth floor of this building on Bedford Hill.
Yeah.
And the building's completely gone.
Wow.
But sometimes when I walk past that, I imagine myself up there somehow. Maybe on some like desk with like a very tall pouch is up there trying to write on my old computer.
Imagine if you just insisted on that being your office. I don't care.
Yeah.
I'm just going to climb, going to get a ladder, put a desk at the top, and every morning I'm going to climb up there. Yeah.
Yes.
People would talk about that.
Yeah. Oh,
yes. They would say you were the bloke on the
If I made
mural.
Enough money, I'll try and make that happen.
If they had a big ladder on the mural with a desk on the top and you working at it.
Yeah. Yeah.
With your magic pen.
Yeah.
Look, always love to see you, Peter. It's love to have you back in the United Kingdom. Just stay here. Don't go back to LA. We need you here. Ladies and gentlemen, give him a mass round of applause. He's comedy royalty.
Thank you.
Paul Munn. Peter Bain. Thank you very much. You have been listening to Rahulastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Peter Bainham. He's too gorgeous. The music is by Scant Regard. Thank you to Chris Evans, not that one. I'm indebted to my producer, Ben Walker. Thank you also to Ben Evans, not that one, for all his work on our social media campaigns where we try to get young people interested in the show. Not like that, in a nice way. Thank you also to Kathleen McKeegan for all her research material. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. Come and see us on tour. RichardHerring.com/Rahulastapa.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.